You're listening to a podcast of the World Stroke Academy, the educational platform of the World Stroke Organization. Every month, WSA Editor-in-Chief Gustavo Sapoznik and Associate Commissioning Editor Anita Arsovska select one paper as their chosen paper of the month for being of particular interest of originality and because it challenges previous concepts or advances in neurology. For the month of February, Dr. Gustavo made a commentary on sleep apnea and ischemic stroke, current knowledge and future directions. This is his interview to one of the authors, Professor Claudio Bassetti.
Hello, everyone. And my name is Gustavo Sapoznik. I'm the editor-in-chief of the World Stroke Academy for the World Stroke Organization. And in this opportunity, we have identified and highlighted a publication recently in published or in Lancet Neurology from Dr. Professor Bassetti and his colleagues. So we have the opportunity to have Professor Bassetti with us. And most of you may already know that Claudio Bassetti is a full professor of neurology, chair of the neurology department at the Inselspital in Bern, and also the dean of the medical faculty at the University of Bern in Switzerland. So after this introduction, thank you, Claudio, for being able to speak with us.
Thank you, Gustavo, for the interest, which I have to say is something very rewarding, because when I started almost 30 years ago to work on sleep and stroke, nobody really was interested in this link and connection.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, you know, and I noticed, so Professor Bassetti has over 500 publications, and almost or more than two-thirds are about, you know, related with the sleep. It's fascinating. So it seems, Claudio, that you were more interested in people who are not awake than those who are awake. Is that right?
Well, no, I would like to change a little bit the statement. It is very interesting. I did my doctoral thesis on coma, and I did work on EEG, evoked potentials, and the prognosis of coma. And actually, I was very proud that as a result of these few works, I was in the guideline committee of the American Academy that made the first recommendation back in the mid-90s about coma. But then I actually woke up, you could say, from coma. And it was a natural transition to go into sleep research. But to now come to your statement, I was interested in sleep not so much because I'm interested in being quiet in a coma-like state or working in the darkness, because I always thought that to bring light into this one-third of life make us maybe understand even better what's happening during the day, including our functioning and our dysfunction. So to study sleep is actually to understand better wakefulness. So it was to enlarge the horizon, if you want. So this is approach as a neurologist.
Thank you. And I was teasing you, obviously.
Oh, well, that's clear. But I like to be teased and also triggered.
Excellent. So, you did a fantastic work and review in Lancet Neurology that it will be highlighted and people can read the editorial as well as your details of the publication. So a few questions for you that can help, you know, the audience. For example, given the, you know, pandemic and that many stroke clinics are going virtually, so what would be your advice? So how can we make a diagnosis or a preliminary diagnosis of sleep apnea when we are not specifically having any other tools other than, you know, having a phone consultation or a virtual consultation? Any advice for primary care physicians?
I understand where you're coming from, but it's not an easy question because, you know, how we can predict the presence of sleep apnea remains a little bit a challenge. You know, people should know that 50% of stroke patients will end up having sleep apnea. So you could say, you should have a way of approaching the diagnosis in all patients. One way to really try to solve the issue is at least being aware of the fact that if the nurse tells you the patient is snoring, or has oximetry changes during the night, that you have the association with sleep apnea and say, oh, maybe if he's loud or restless during the night, or if he has oximetric changes, you should think. And you know, think about it is already half the way.
Excellent. That's great. And remember, you know, before you know you receive a referral or you see a patient with a potential sleep apnea, you know, most of those patients are being initially seen in primary care by the primary care physicians. What would be your advice about how can we help them increase their awareness about the sleep apnea, and how should they start, you know, working up those patients?
Yes, I mean, I think this is obviously a crucial question. And, you know, when I started working 25, 30 years ago in the field, there was no evidence. Now, what I think one can say are two things. One is that if you have severe sleep apnea, you have an increased risk for myocardial infarction and stroke. And this is independent of other risk factors. So detecting sleep apnea and treating sleep apnea is a way to reduce the risk of subsequent or recurrent stroke. On the other side, we do have, and the evidence is not yet, I would say, complete, that if you have stroke and sleep apnea, not only you have frequently the problem, but if you treat properly, do something good. Think about the penumbra in the acute phase, hypoxia, hemodynamic instability. This is not good for the penumbra. So in a way, it should be an intuition that if you have sleep apnea, recurrent hypoxemia, hemodynamic instability, this is not good for the brain. But it's not only pathophysiology that should link to this association, but also the fact that we start having first studies demonstrating a positive effect of intervention. But to be honest and to be frank, as we say in the paper, particularly in the post-stroke situation, more data are needed.
Thank you, Claudio. Much appreciated. And then, given in the era of, you know, technological advances, so are there any tools or applications that can be helpful either for patients or physicians? So is there any way that we can quantify the risk of a sleep apnea using those tools? Or is there any tool that you would suggest or recommend?
Well, this is obviously also a very important and very very crucial question, just because being so frequent and being the regular sleep study so cumbersome and so expensive, this cannot be the future of diagnosing sleep apnea in stroke-prone subject or in stroke patients. Yes, there are developments. Now, right now, there are portable systems that you can use, and they are very cheap in the stroke unit, for example, and this is quite cheap. It is not very precise, but it gives already a good screening opportunity, some portable respirographies or even simpler devices. But the technology of the future should look at even something more simple. What we think should be measured are the pulse, the oximeter, and the cortical activity. So if you have something, and even in my lab, we are working on new devices. And you know that everybody has this type of devices that you can carry on your wrist. If you could combine these three variables, and we actually often do in the stroke units, I think this will be the future. Now, which devices, how to validate it, this remains to be done. So, but there are lots of research going on this topic.
Thank you, Claudio. That's great and very insightful. Is there anything else that you would like to add, or you know, beyond the publication that you know you made very important and summary points in the Lancet Neurology publication?
Well, you know, I think the statement that I would like to make is that we sleep for the brain. So, I mean, this is something that neurologists and physicians tend to forget. Sleep is by the brain, so it's a product of the brain. So if you have a sick brain, the sleep will not be normal just because it is a product of the brain. But vice versa, we have to understand as physicians that we sleep for the brain. So if the sleep is not normal, if it is disturbed by sleep apnea or other sleep disorder, the brain is not functioning well. Now, if you have stroke, you have a brain that is already suffering. So being attentive to sleep disorders, including sleep apnea, this is the topic of the article, is also using a window of opportunity. And I would like to end in saying there is a lot of research, not only on sleep apnea, but also other sleep disorders. And maybe in the future, we can come back to the non-apneic sleep disorders and their relevance for stroke.
Thank you. That's great. And we would like, on behalf of the World Stroke Academy and the World Stroke Organization, I would like to thank you very much for this time and the opportunity to be able to speak with you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Gustavo, and the World Stroke Academy for the interest. And I would congratulate for the great work you do. Thank you.
Thank you.